Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, August 8th. Ranchers reported abandoned oil wells spewing wastewater. A new study blames fracking. Fracking wastewater injected underground for permanent disposal traveled 12 miles through geological faults before bursting to the surface through a previously plugged West Texas oil well in 2022, according to a new study from Southern Methodist University. It's the first study to draw specific links between wastewater injection and recent blowouts in the Permian Basin, the nation's top-producing oil field where old oil wells have recently begun to spray salty water. It raises concerns about the possibility of widespread groundwater contamination in West Texas and increases the urgency for oil producers to find alternative outlets for the millions of gallons of toxic wastewater that comes from Permian Basin oil wells every day. We've established a specific link between wastewater injection and oil well blowouts in the Permian Basin, wrote the authors of the study, funded in part by NASA, and published last month in the journal Geophysical Research Letters. The finding suggests a potential for more blowouts in the near future, it said. For years, the Texas agency that regulates the oil and gas extraction industry has refrained from putting forth an explanation for the blowout phenomenon, even as a chorus of local landowners alleged that wastewater injections are driving the flows of gassy brine onto the surface of their property since about 2022. Injection disposal is currently the primary outlet for the tremendous amount of oil-filled wastewater, also known as produced water, that flows from fracked oil wells in West Texas. Thousands of injection wells dot the Permian Basin, each reviewed and permitted by Texas's oil-filled regulator, the Texas Railroad Commission. Oil producers are exploring alternatives. A small portion of produced water is reused in fracking, and Texas is in the process of permitting facilities that will treat produced water and then release it into rivers and streams. Still, underground injection remains the cheapest and most popular method by far. A scientific connection has solidified between the practice of injection disposal and the increasing strength and frequency of earthquakes nearby. In the Permian Basin, a steady crescendo of tremors peaked last November with magnitude 5.4 earthquake, the state's strongest in 30 years, triggering heightened restrictions on injection in the area. The link between injections and surface blowouts, however, has remained unconfirmed despite widespread suspicions. The latest study marks a big step forward in scientific documentation. It just validates what we've been saying, Sarah Strogner, the oil and gas attorney who ran an unsuccessful campaign for a seat on the Railroad Commission in 2022, said about the latest study. For the last 3 years, Strogner has represented the Antenna Cattle Ranch, where dozens of abandoned oil wells have been spraying back to life. Strogner persistently alleged that nearby wastewater injection was responsible, but she couldn't prove it. Now a scientific consensus is beginning to fall in behind her. Our work independently comes to the same conclusion in different areas of the Permian Basin, said Katie Syme, a geologist with the Center for Injection and Seismicity Research of the University of Texas at Austin, citing several upcoming papers she and her colleagues will release at major geoscience conferences in the coming year. There is a link between injection and surface flows in some cases. In a study published December 2023, Syme and others reported linear surface deformation features in parts of the Permian Basin. The ground was swelling along channels that suggested pressure moving through underground faults. Some of those were ancient geological faults, Syme said. Others appeared to be created by recent human activity. Many of them were growing, heaving, and bulging, the research shows. When that channel of underground pressure hits an old oil well that is broken or improperly plugged, it can shoot to the surface. This is reaching a critical point in the Permian Basin, Syme said. The scale of injection is increasing. About 15 million barrels or 630 million gallons of produced water are injected for disposal in the Permian Basin every day, Syme said. A Railroad Commission spokesperson, Patty Ramon, said in a statement the agency is talking to operators in the Crane County area regarding geology and other data they maintain, reviewing satellite imagery and analyzing RRC records such as well plugging information. We will be continuing this type of analysis in our commitment to ensuring environmental protection, Ramon said. Blowout in 2022 SPARC study. The SMU study examined on January 2022 blowout in Crane County that gushed almost 15 million gallons of brine before it was capped, according to the paper. That would fill about 23 Olympic-sized swimming pools. The study traced the cause of the blowout to a cluster of 9 injection wells about 12 miles to the northeast. Researchers pulled publicly available data on injection volumes at those wells and found they lined up closely to surface swelling that preceded the blowout. 7 of the wells belonged to Goodnight Midstream and 2 belonged to Blackbeard Operating, according to Railroad Commission records. A spokesperson for Blackbeard said the company is committed to ensuring prudent operations, and will continue to operate its assets in accordance with all applicable laws and in coordination with all applicable regulatory agencies. Goodnight did not respond to a query. According to the paper, injection at those 9 wells began in 2018 at a rate of about 362,000 gallons per day and doubled to 720,000 gallons per day in late 2019. In late 2020, it doubled again to 1.5 million gallons. 2 Olympic-sized swimming pools crammed underground every day, which is where the ground near the blowout site began to inflate. The study found that the volume injected matched the volume of the surface bulge 12 miles away. These observations suggest that this group of injection wells to the northwest of the study area, injecting into the San Andreas and Glorieta formations, is responsible for the surface deformation in that region, the study said. Those wells reached a depth between 4,300 and 3,300 feet, but the SMU study found that the source of the bulge in the earth was much shallower, between 2,300 and 1,600 feet underground. This suggests the leakage of wastewater from the San Andreas to Glorieta formations to the shallow formations, the study said. The bottom of the Rustler Aquifer, the lowest usable source of groundwater in the Permian, sits between 800 and 1,000 feet underground. The SMU study did not examine the possibility of groundwater contamination. Our findings highlight the need for stricter regulations on wastewater injection practices and proper management of abandoned wells, the study said. Todd Staples, president of the Texas Oil and Gas Association, said, "The Railroad Commission is taking appropriate action by thoroughly gathering and reviewing data to address the issues experienced in Crane County." He said the industry cooperates with the Railroad Commission by providing data to help analyze geological formations. In addition, the industry and academia continue to explore alternatives to wastewater injection through market-based water reuse and recycling, as well as innovative pilot programs, Staples said. Ranchers report damaged land. West Texas ranchers who own land where contaminated water is seeping from underground are beginning to worry it will soon become uninhabitable. Last February, saltwater flooded parts of Bill Wright's ranch about 50 miles southwest of Odessa. The lifelong rancher purchased the land in 2014, hoping to pass it to his kids. He told the Texas Tribune he wasn't sure how much of the ranch would survive the leaking wells. When it was clear the flow of water threatened the property last December, he asked the Railroad Commission to seal the well had leaked from. It took the commission months and millions of dollars to plug the well. His brother, Schuyler Wright, faces a similar predicament at his ranch roughly 60 miles to the west of Pecos County. In Pecos County, he has asked the Railroad Commission for years to investigate the multiple abandoned leaking wells on his property. The liquid has eroded the equipment on the surface and killed the plants. After the water dried up, the ground was crusted white with salt. It's what we've known all along, Schuyler Wright said. What we're doing is not sustainable. Ashley Wyatt, owner of a ranch 50 miles east of Schuyler Wright's ranch in Crane County, told the Railroad Commission during a 2022 meeting that she believes excessive injection by nearby oil producers was causing the fluid to spray from abandoned oil wells on her property. A Railroad Commission staff member said the agency asked operators to check for a source of the leak. The operators told the commission they did not find any. The Railroad Commission, during the meeting, also said they did not find a well in the agency's database and that the nearest injection wells were less than 2 miles away. The agency instructed staff to prevent truckers from accessing those injection sites, telling operators to find others until further notice. The wells continue to leak. Laura Briggs, who also owns a ranch in Pecos County less than half a mile east of Schuyler Wright's place, said she has seen 5 old wells started leaking since 2015. The Railroad Commission plugged 2 of them, she said, but one began to leak through the seal again. Briggs has repeatedly given testimony and submitted documentation to the Railroad Commission asking for help. Based on her experience, she believes the subterranean problems in West Texas are much more than what the Railroad Commission can handle. If I could do one thing differently, we would have gotten a mobile home so it was easier to get the hell out of here, Briggs said. If this ranch goes leaking, we just have to leave and nobody can buy the property. No insurance will cover it. You're just done. Despite those problems, the Railroad Commission approved 400 new disposal wells in the Permian Basin alone in 2022, according to agency documents, and 480 in 2022. Threats to groundwater. The use of injection wells for disposal has expanded immensely with the practice of fracking, according to Dominic DiGuillo, a geoscientist who worked for 30 years at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. But DiGuillo said these wells are still regulated under rules from the 1970s and 80s. Increasingly, he said, these rules appear insufficient. West Texas isn't the only place where this is happening, DiGuillo said. Overpressurization of aquifers due to disposal of produced water is a problem. In 2022, DiGuillo conducted a review of Ohio's wastewater injection program for the group Physicians, Scientists, and Engineers for Healthy Energy and found that 2 problems were injected fluids were leaking from some formations meant to contain them and excessive injections were causing other formations to become overpressurized. There was one big difference with Texas. In November 2021, DiGuillo's study said Ohio had just 228 injection wells for wastewater disposal, Meanwhile, in Texas, it had 13,585 in 2022, according to Railroad Commission documents. The primary threat posed by produced water migrating from injection wells is groundwater contamination. If deep formations fail to contain the toxic waste injected into them, that waste could end up in shallow freshwater aquifers. It could happen two ways, DiGuillo said. If the wastewater enters the inside of an old oil well through corroded holes in the casing, it can travel up the steel pipe to the surface, spilling and seeping into the ground. If the wastewater moves up the outside of an old oil well, through the cement that surrounds the steel pipe, it could already be flowing into the aquifer. That would be bad news for West Texas, which depends upon almost entirely groundwater for drinking and crop irrigation. Once groundwater contamination happens, it's too expensive to remediate, DiGuillo said. So when it occurs, that's basically it. You've ruined that resource. ATMA celebrates 811 Day with inaugural Gold Cup of Safe Digging Award. To raise awareness of the importance of safe digging, ATMOS Energy celebrates 811 Day annually on August 11th as a reminder for everyone to help protect underground utility lines by calling 811 before any excavation project, no matter how large or small. This year, ATMOS Energy has instituted a new award, the Gold Cup of Safe Digging, which is being presented to contractors, municipalities, and other third-party excavators that demonstrate a remarkable safety record and epitomize the gold standard of safe digging in the communities we serve. The Gold Cup of Safe Digging celebrates excavators that have sustained their commitment to protecting underground utility lines. Andrea Goodson, ATMOS Energy Public Affairs Manager, said in a news release, "Natural gas safety is a partnership, and this award is an outstanding way to recognize those community partners who share our conviction that the safety of our customers, employees, and communities is the highest priority. We congratulate the winners of this year's award and look forward to making this an annual event in the years to come." Here in the Permian Basin, ATMOS Energy was pleased to present the Gold Cup of Safe Digging to winners including Driver Pipeline Midland, Standard Utility Midland. Effective damage prevention helps to avoid or minimize harm to people, property, and the environment by proactively identifying potential risks and implementing solutions to prevent incidents before they occur. Call 811 is a critical component of damage prevention efforts that confirms digging projects are conducted safely and without disrupting essential utility services. Striking even a single line can lead to injury, repair costs, inconvenient outages, and fines, the release said. Texas law requires homeowners, excavation companies, and contractors to call 811 three business days before digging. When using this free service, the caller is connected to a local call center that notifies area utility companies of the location where digging will occur. Professional locators then arrive at the digging site to mark the approximate locations of the underground lines with flags, spray paint, or both. For more information about 811 and safe digging practices, visit Texas 811 or the ATMOS Energy website for safety tips. And don't forget to become a safety ambassador by signing the Call 811 pledge. Instructors flocked to Teacher University. Hundreds of educators converged on Permian High School Wednesday for the elementary installment of Teacher University. Director of Talent Development Debbie Bynum said between 800 and 1,000 elementary teachers were expected Wednesday, and the same number for high school teachers at Teacher University August 8th, also at PHS. Our session this year, are continuing to focus on our areas where we've been focusing. We have a new science textbook starting this year, so we're getting training on using those new science materials. It's just continuing to support the different work streams that we've been using over the last couple of years as we're continuing to grow that. There's additional digital learning. How does AI fit into the classroom? Looking at things like phonic construction, just continuing to build our teacher skill set, Bynum said. She added that the digital learning component is always evolving. Our digital learning specialists are always working to bring us the newest information that we need so that we stay current and abreast, and do so in a way that we keep our kids safe, Bynum said. 6th grade through 12th grade teachers will be learning the same types of things August 8th. The Fine Arts PE health teachers are at Odessa High School for their teacher university. Permian teachers were also at school for campus training, Bynum said. So far, it seems to be going well. I've gotten a little bit of feedback from our first sessions that started this morning, and the teachers seem to be excited about what's there and the courses that were being offered. Some of the sessions are already predicted to be beyond full, so that's always a good sign, Bynum said. Felicia Burdorf, who works in Advanced Academic Services, was a facilitator handing out information and answering questions. Having started off with National Math and Science Initiative training, teachers already have some professional development under their belts. We went back a little bit early for the training, and we helped teachers with strategies and different ways to help facilitate and differentiate. I think so far, even though we've just started, it's been eventful because we've had those trainings and then the new teacher orientation as well. We got to meet the new teachers coming into our district and kind of show them everything that we had to offer. So far, so good, Burdorf said. ConocoPhillips Marathon merger nears completion. Houston-based company emphasizes LNG development. ConocoPhillips had a busy second quarter progressing on its new Willow Project oil field in the National Petroleum Reserve on the North Slope of Alaska. Its $22.5 billion merger with Marathon Oil and its liquefied natural gas project at Port Arthur and Qatar. Chairman CEO Ryan M. Lance said during his earnings conference call that his company had record production in the quarter with strong contributions from its entire portfolio. In the lower 48, we still expect to deliver low single-digit production growth in 2024 at a lower level of capital spending relative to 2023, Lance said from Houston. Shifting to commercial LNG, we recently signed two additional long-term regasification and sales agreements to deliver volumes into Europe and Asia, both of which will start in 2027. With these agreements, we have now secured just under 6 million tons per annum of volume placement for our offtake commitments, and we continue to work new offtake and placement opportunities as we look to expand our commercial LNG portfolio up to 10 million to 15 million tons per annum in the coming years. Lance reported that transaction and integration planning activities are underway to ensure a seamless transition upon the close of ConocoPhillips' planned acquisition of the Houston-based Marathon Oil. The Marathon Oil shareholder vote has been set for August 29th, and we are working through the Federal Trade Commission's second request that we received in mid-July, and we still expect to close the transaction late in the fourth quarter, he said. On return of capital, we remain committed to distributing at least $9 billion to shareholders this year on a standalone basis. Executive Vice President Chief Financial Officer William L. Bullock Jr. said the company produced 1,945,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day during the second quarter, representing 4% underlying growth year over year. Lower 48 production averaged 1,105,000 barrels equivalent per day, with 748,000 in the Permian Basin, 238,000 in the Eagle Ford, and 105,000 in the Bakken, Bullock said. Alaska and international production averaged 839,000 barrels of oil equivalent per day, also representing roughly 4% underlying growth year over year. He said capital expenditures were just under $3 billion, and the company returned $1.9 billion to shareholders in the quarter, ending with cash and short-term investments of $6.3 billion and $1 billion in long-term liquid investments. For the third quarter, we expect production to be in a range of 1.87 million to 1.91 million barrel equivalent per day, Bullock said. This is inclusive of the 90,000 barrels per day of turnaround impacts that we discussed last quarter. The primary driver of that is our once every 5-year turnaround at Surmount, a northeastern Alberta, Canada, which will impact production by about 50,000 barrels per day during the quarter. On income statement guidance items, we have lowered our depreciation, depletion, and amortization guidance to a range of $9.3 billion to $9.4 billion, and we have lowered our annual after-tax adjusted corporate segment net loss to a range of $800 million to $900 million. Obituaries. Billie Jean Bill McFarland. Billie Jean Bill McFarland, 95, of Odessa, died Saturday, July 27th in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. August 9th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Mac Welch Dalton, 85, died Saturday, August 3rd in Odessa. Services are pending with Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. June Conway, 94, of Odessa, died Friday, August 2nd in Vernon. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. August 10th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Helen Eileen Penn. Helen E. Penn, 90, of Electra, Texas, passed away on August 3rd in Odessa. Helen was born to Emmett and Carrie Armstrong Broderson on June 8, 1934. She is preceded in death by her parents, son Randall Penn, brother Emmett Broderson, and sister Fern Caraway. Graveside services will be held at 1 p.m. August 9th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home. Olympics. Hopple advances to semifinals. Bryce Hopple has advanced to the semifinals in the 800 meters in the Paris Olympics. The Midland native took second in his heat Wednesday, finishing with a time of 1 minute and 45.24 seconds. Spain's Mohamed Atawi took first in the heat in a time of 1 minute 44.81 seconds. The semifinal will begin at 4:30 a.m. Friday. School zones active as students return to school. As students head back to school, Midland ISD is emphasizing the importance of school zone safety. Drivers should be aware of more school buses on our roads and an increase in pedestrian traffic. Flashing school zone lights will be activated on days when school is in session. MISD police will have a visible presence around all schools, and drivers should be aware that there will be a zero tolerance policy for speeding. Our department will be very present as we return to regular patrols at schools, Midland ISD Police Chief Scott McCowan said in a news release. drivers should be aware that school is back in session and be mindful of students who may attempt to cross the street. MISD urges drivers to keep our students and community safe by observing school zone signs, slowing down, and watching for pedestrians. Vehicles on both sides of the roads are required to stop for a school bus when the bus stop sign is displayed. Drivers should also be reminded that using a cell phone in a school zone is prohibited and could result in a fine. Important dates to remember: buses begin practice routes on August 8th. Students return to all schools August 13th. MISD is committed to ensuring the safety of all students and staff as we start the new school year. National Night Out. The Odessa Police Department would like to encourage the public to sign up for the 2024 National Night Out, which is scheduled for Tuesday, October 1st from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. The deadline to sign up is Friday, September 27th at 5 p.m. National Night Out is designed to heighten crime and drug prevention awareness, generate support for and participation in local anti-crime partnerships, and send a message to criminals, letting them know that neighborhoods are organized and fighting back. Email odessapd@odessa-tx.gov with any questions or call 432-335-3322 or 432-335-5759 for more information. Midland Memorial nationally recognized for commitment to quality care for heart attacks. Midland Memorial Hospital has received the American Heart Association's Get With The Guidelines Coronary Artery Disease, STEMI, receiving Center Gold Plus recognition for its commitment to offering rapid, research-based care for people experiencing a specific type of heart attack known as an ST elevation myocardial infarction, STEMI, known to be more severe and dangerous than other types of heart attacks. Each year, about 285,000 people in the U.S. experience this type of heart attack, caused by a complete blockage of a coronary artery. Nearly 40% of people who go to the emergency room with acute coronary syndrome are diagnosed with a STEMI. Like all heart attacks, this requires timely treatment to restore blood flow as quickly as possible, a news release said. Recognition of a STEMI receiving center is designed to showcase hospitals that provide 24/7 support for STEMI. These important facilities coordinate with a network of referring hospitals and emergency medical services to provide guidelines-directed STEMI and in-STEMI care. Effective and timely care is crucial for patients experience a STEMI heart attack. The American Heart Association's guidelines call for specific interventions for these patients, both in hospital and post-hospitalization, said Dr. Abhinav Goyal, American Heart Association volunteer, professor of the Department of Cardiology in Emory School of Medicine, with a joint appointment in the Department of Epidemiology and Chief Quality Officer for the Emory Heart and Vascular Center. The STEMI Receiving Center Award is earned by hospitals that demonstrate a commitment to treating patients according to the most up-to-date research-based guidelines for STEMI care as outlined by the American Heart Association. The MMH is dedicated to improving the quality of heart care, and the American Heart Association's Get With The Guidelines program helps us achieve that goal, Stephen Bowerman, President Chief Executive Officer, said in the release. The program puts proven knowledge and guidelines to work on a daily basis so patients have the best possible chance of survival. MMH also received the American Heart Association's Get With The Guidelines Coronary Artery Disease in STEMI Gold with Target Type 2 Diabetes recognition for its commitment to offering rapid, research-based care to people experiencing a specific type of heart attack known as a non-ST elevation myocardial infarction in STEMI. Veteran suicide awareness ruck hike scheduled at 16 Texas state parks in September. Austin. September is National Suicide Prevention Month, and 16 Texas state parks will be hosting hikes to shed light on this issue, which affects many veterans and their loved ones. The Veteran Suicide Awareness Ruck Hike, an annual event organized by Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, TPWD, Veterans Liaison Nicole Metchler allows families, friends, and veterans to network and build a support system, as well as spread the word about veteran-specific mental health issues, and Newsreally said. The second annual Ruck Hike isn't taking place just on traditional park trails. The event features different kinds of trails, including kayak and swim races, yoga sessions, and guest speakers. Although the event is not a fundraiser, veteran and military groups have collaborated with participating parks to provide resources on site. "We are so excited to have more parks involved in this initiative," Metchler said in the release. "We encourage veterans from around the state to take part in these events and enjoy what Texas State Parks has to offer. There is no need to sign up for any of the park's activities, just show up. The following parks are hosting events throughout the month. September 7th at 8:30 a.m., Waco Tanks State Park and Historic Site. September 14th from 2 to 4 p.m., Swim Race at Balmoray State Park. September 21st from 2 to 4 p.m., Atlanta State Park. September 21st from 8 a.m. to 12 p.m., Brazos Bend State Park. September 21st from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., Cedar Hill State Park. September 21st from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., Eisenhower State Park. September 21st at 8 and 10 a.m., Purvis Creek State Park. September 22nd at 10 a.m., Yoga Before Hiking at Dinosaur Valley State Park. September 28th at 8 a.m., Abilene State Park. September 28th from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m., Kayaking at Cooper State Lake State Park. September 28th from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Dangerfield State Park. September 28th at 9 a.m., Garner State Park. September 28th at 7:30 a.m., McKinney Falls State Park. September 28th at 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., Government Canyon State Park Natural Area. September 29th at 10 a.m., possible water activities before hiking at Inks Lake State Park. And September 30th from 5 to 8 p.m., paddleboarding at Lake Bob Stanlin State Park. If there are any questions about the events, feel free to reach out to vetcontact@tpwd.texas.gov.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Permian Proud for August 7th, 2024 by staff report. Midland's Bryce Hopple advances to 800-meter semifinals in Paris Olympics 2024. Midland High graduate Bryce Hopple advanced to the Olympic 800-meter semifinal after cruising to a second-place finish in his first round heat. Hopple completed the heat with the time of 1 minute and 45.24 seconds. In its coverage, NBC replayed the heat on TikTok, noting in text on the video, "Bryce Hopple makes it look easy." The 800-meter semifinals are scheduled for Friday, August 9th. Help Midland ISD name new school and select a mascot. August 6th, 2024 by staff report. Midland ISD is looking to name a new elementary school and select a mascot with help from the community. In June, the district celebrated a groundbreaking for the school that marked the first step in the construction of 2023 bond projects. Slated to open in August next year, the 92,500-square-foot building will accommodate up to 830 students in the area of the Lone Star Trail subdivision in Northeast Midland. An online survey has been released as part of the organized effort to name the campus and mascot. The survey was sent to remain open for nominations until August 14, 2024, at 5 p.m. After the survey period closes, an appointed naming committee will review all submissions and make a recommendation to the school board for approval. The name must meet one of the following criteria. Number one, memorializing a person who has served for the district or community, especially in service to children. Number two, memorializing a person who has made a significant contribution to society and or education, and his or her name shall lend prestige and status to an institution of learning. Number three, a local residential or geographical area. Number four, a district property donor or his or her family members. The addition of the new elementary school is very exciting for the students of Midland and our community as a whole, said Jessica Redman, Executive Director of School Leadership. The naming of the school is a major milestone in this process. This is the community's school, and it is important to receive feedback from Midlanders.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, August 7th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Midland Built Satellites Ready for Launch, by Mella McEwen, Oil Editor. Five Midland Built Satellites have been completed, assembled, and environmentally tested. And now, AST Space Mobile is sending the five Bluebird satellites to Cape Canaveral, Florida, where they will be launched on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket during a 7-day window in September. The launch comes 2 years after AST's prototype Blue Walker satellite, also built in Midland, was launched, and a year after it successfully relayed a 5G call from Hawaii to Spain. As the largest commercial communications array ever deployed into low Earth orbit, Blue Walker 3 reinforced our mission by achieving industry firsts ever since 2023, including voice, video, and broadband in 4G and 5G, directly from space to everyday, unmodified smartphones. Scott Wisniewski, President and Chief Strategy Officer, told the Reporter Telegram by email. By achieving these important milestones, the satellite, which is still operational, served a crucial testbed for validating the company's technology. This allowed AST to refine the design and operational strategies for the upcoming Bluebird satellites, ensuring they can achieve the goal of delivering cellular broadband service from space, he wrote. Each satellite has communications arrays measuring 693 square feet. This string of successes, along with partnerships with AT&T and Verizon in the U.S., has given the company a $5 billion market capitalization. The market valuation reflects the hard work and dedication of our team, as well as the strength of our technology and partners. We remain focused on continuing to deliver value to our shareholders, customers, and employees, and are excited to continue to work towards a more connected future for everyone, Wisniewski said. The first five Bluebirds are planned to provide U.S. nationwide non-continuous service with over 5,600 cells in premium low-band spectrum. AST's Midland facilities are continuing manufacturing for the next satellites, with a target for run rate production of 4 to 6 satellites per month. As for what's next, Wisniewski reported the company is focused on building the first and only cellular broadband network from space. With AT&T and Verizon as partners in the U.S., the company is targeting 100% coverage of the U.S., to bridge the digital divide, and connecting those who are lacking cellular broadband service today. During the first half of 2024, the company secured additional strategic investment from AT&T, Verizon, Google, and Vodafone, as well as a new contract award with the U.S. government through a prime contractor. The company has agreements and understandings with more than 45 mobile network operators globally, which have more than 2.8 billion existing subscribers in total. This column is called Commentary. It is entitled, Chevron's Move to Texas, Not Worth Celebrating, by Chris Tomlinson, columnist. Yippee! Another world-class polluter is moving its global headquarters to Houston, bringing a few hundred employees and a fossil fuel business plan unable to adapt to climate change. Chevron's relocation from San Ramon, California, is no surprise, since most of the company has long resided in Greater Houston. CEO Mike Wirth chose low-regulation, zero-income tax Texas to shore up profits. Outside of bragging rights, the move will have almost no impact on the local economy, except, perhaps, to make Houston and Texas more dependent on the oil and gas industry that has caused so much heartache. Yes, I know, I'm supposed to celebrate the arrival of the 10th biggest U.S. corporation, according to Fortune magazine. But another behemoth from a shrinking industry struggling to cope with the energy transition is not something we should encourage. As I explained in a recent Tomlinson's Take newsletter, Texas has a long history of attracting ne'er-do-wells who want to escape their pasts. Last year, California's Governor Gavin Newsom and Attorney General Rob Bonta unveiled a plan to monitor big oil for potential price gouging. Global oil companies have raked in huge profits in recent years by limiting production and driving up prices, something they call capital discipline. We're making major progress with the legislature to hold big oil accountable for fleecing Californians at the pump, Newsom said in a statement. What we're asking for is simple: transparency and accountability to drive the oil industry out of the shadows. In September 2023, Bonta filed a lawsuit alleging Chevron, four other global oil companies, and the industry's leading lobbyist intentionally deceived investors and the public for decades about global warming. Climate change has transformed life on this planet and threatens to cause even greater personal misery and economic loss. California has spent tens of billions of dollars to adapt to climate change and address the damages climate change has caused so far, and the state will need to spend multiples of that in the years to come, the lawsuit alleges. Texas has been home to the highest concentration of Chevron employees for more than a decade, but Wirth's predecessor, John Watson, was reportedly opposed to leaving California. The latest regulatory onslaught, though, was too much for the $273 billion corporation. Texas offers a business-friendly environment, a more affordable cost of living, and better proximity to key counterparts in the service sector, our industry, and academia, the company said in a statement. Governor Greg Abbott's new court system also adds to the business-friendly environment. In June 2023, the governor signed House Bill 19 and Senate Bill 1045 into law, which gave him authority to appoint district and appellate judges to handle commercial civil cases. The House bill's author, State Representative Andrew Murr, Republican from Junction, said he was inspired by Texans for Lawsuit Reform to create, quote, a specialized business trial court to streamline resolutions of business disputes, and by ensuring the court is staffed by qualified and skilled judges, ideally giving businesses confidence in Texas's legal system and encouraging them to incorporate and headquarter in Texas, unquote. Starting September 1st, Texas-based corporations must no longer worry about elected judges handling lawsuits against them. They can rely on Abbott to appoint judges to protect them. The rest of us, meanwhile, must cope with whatever Yahoo makes it through the political party's primaries. Elon Musk is also taken with these new courts. After a judge in Delaware's Court of Chancery blasted Tesla's board of directors for approving a ridiculously rich compensation package, Musk announced he would move Tesla, SpaceX, and Twitter to Texas. At least Musk's companies are forward-looking. The oil and gas industry is all about slowing change and blocking accountability. Every serious scientist and government recognizes we must reduce carbon emissions to slow global warming and protect life as we know it. Consumers will need to stop burning so much oil and natural gas to produce energy, which means we will need a lot less of them. The oil and gas industry must shrink to prevent the worst of climate change. Every time oil and gas profits go bust, Texans promise to diversify the economy. Yet, oil and gas contributed $26.3 billion in state and local tax revenue and royalties in 2023, the Texas Oil and Gas Association reported. Texas Republicans refuse to utter the words climate change for fear of killing their golden goose. Chevron's relocation will make politicians even more unlikely to encourage the changes our economy and climate require. So, pardon me if I don't pop the champagne. This article is entitled, Energy Department Awards $2.2 Billion to Strengthen Electrical Grid and Add Clean Power, by Jennifer McDermott, Associated Press. The Department of Energy on Tuesday announced $2.2 billion in funding for 8 projects across 18 states to strengthen the electrical grid against increasing extreme weather, advance the transition to cleaner electricity, and meet a growing demand for power. The money will help build more than 600 miles of new transmission lines and upgrade about 400 miles of existing lines so that they can carry more current. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm said the funding is important because extreme weather events fueled by climate change are increasing, damaging towers and bringing down wires, causing power outages. Hurricane Beryl made landfall in Texas on July 8th and knocked out power to nearly 3 million people, for example. Officials have said at least a dozen Houston-area residents died from complications related to the heat and losing power. The investments will provide more reliable, affordable electricity for 56 million homes and businesses, according to the DOE. Granholm said the funds are the single largest direct investment ever in the nation's grid. They'll help us to meet the needs of electrified homes and businesses and new manufacturing facilities and all of these growing data centers that are placing demands on the grid, Granholm said in a press call to announce the funding. It's the second round of awards through a $10.5 billion DOE program called Grid Resilience and Innovation Partnerships. It was funded through the Bipartisan Infrastructure Law of 2021. More projects will be announced this fall. Among the ones in this round, more than 100 miles of transmission line in California will be upgraded so that new renewable energy can be added quickly and as a response to a growing demand for electricity. A project in New England will upgrade onshore connection points for electricity generated by wind turbines offshore, allowing 4,800 megawatts of wind energy to be added, enough to power about 2 million homes. The Montana Department of Commerce will get $700 million. Most of that will go toward building a 415-mile high-voltage direct current transmission line across Montana and North Dakota. The North Plains connector will increase the ability to move electricity from east to west and vice versa, and help protect against extreme weather and power disruptions. The Virginia Department of Energy will get $85 million to employ clean electricity and clean backup power at two data centers, one in-state and one in South Carolina. The DOA chose this project because the data centers will be responsive to the grid in a new way. They could provide needed electricity to the local grid on a hot day from batteries, or reduce their energy use in times of high demand. This could serve as a model for other data centers to reduce their impact on a local area, since they place such high demand on the grid, according to the department. These investments are certainly a step in the right direction, and they are the right types of investments, said Max Luke, Director of Business Development and Regulatory Affairs at VEIR, an early-stage Massachusetts company developing transmission lines capable of carrying five times the power of conventional ones. If you look at the scale of the challenge and the quantity of grid capacity needed for deep decarbonization at net zero, it's a drop in the bucket. According to Princeton University's Net Zero America research, the United States will need to expand electricity transmission by roughly 60% by 2030 and may need to triple it by 2050. This article is entitled Fantastic Needlepoint Offers Stitching Materials and Classes by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. When Christy Byes went to a needlepoint store in San Angelo, she fell in love. I kept thinking, somebody's got to open a store here, Myes said. Then my husband said, well, I think that's you. And she did. Fantastic Needlepoint opened in Midland on November 1st last year at 2101 West Wadley Avenue. It is now the only needlepoint store in the Permian Basin. Myes was a home economics teacher, a seamstress, and always loved doing crafts. But it wasn't until the COVID-19 pandemic that she honed in on the needlepoint craft. I've always been a crafter, Myes said. I've always been into the needle arts and grew up sewing and doing those kinds of things. Needlepoint is a type of hand embroidery that is stitched on an open weave canvas. But according to Myes, it's much more than that. You're painting a picture with the thread, Myes said. I always tell my new stitchers that needlepoint is like a picture in a moment of your life. You will always remember what you are doing when you're working on a project. Myes used a pillow with a fish stitched on it as an example, saying that when she worked on it, they were taking her son to his first concert. It represented tennis tournaments, her son and his friends contributed to the stitching, and it represented her husband's grandmother passing away. All the memories flood back to her when she looks at the pillow she stitched. Louise Acker of Stitch Club Midland agreed that needlepoint holds a lot of memories. I was shown needlepoint from a very young age. My family has been stitchers, and I grew up with a needlepoint Christmas stocking, Acker said. It's almost like an heirloom, and it keeps the tradition going. Acker added that she picked up needlepoint again when she was traveling for nursing in Maine during a blizzard. Anytime she picks up her project, she thinks of the blizzard. Maya said that although needlepoint is traditionally thought of as something an older demographic would do, there's been a surge of younger stitchers. Needlepoint is bringing generations together, Acker said. We're learning from each other. It's been fun, and is truly a community bringing together many people. Fantastic Needlepoint offers all that you need to start needlepoint stitching, such as threads, canvases, scissors, needles, stretcher bars, and tacks. The store also offers finishings to help stitchers with their projects. Over that past 8 months, Fantastic Needlepoint has also become a meeting place for stitchers in the Permian Basin. People were coming in even before I opened, Mize said. They were excited and would come ask questions like, "Are you going to have this?" Mize compared Fantastic Needlepoint to an art studio for stitchers, because customers typically come in, buy the material they need, and sit down at the large table in the center of the store to start stitching. Before the business opened, stitching clubs would meet at the library or the country club. Now they're able to stitch in the heart of the store that has all the materials they need. "I didn't know how much being part of that community was going to be to me," Mize said. "I didn't know that my stitchers would help me cover things when it rained in case the ceiling leaked. I didn't know it was going to be such a community investment." Fantastic Needlepoint has been the home to many stitchers, offering clubs a place to meet. Mize has also worked on offering classes to stitchers in the store. "There's people have stitched for 40-plus years, and the wonderful thing is they volunteer to teach classes," Mize said. "When I'm busy, they'll get up and help pick out threads like their shop girls." Mize added that she has had several teachers come in from out of state to teach a variety of stitching classes. She also has a teacher from Houston coming in to teach ribbon work on a cross, and a teacher from Charlotte coming soon. "I'm trying to provide opportunities for stitchers that maybe we don't always get in the Permian Basin." Classes are typically scheduled on weekends and hold 8 to 10 students. "I didn't know how much joy I would have locking my door and opening it up every day," Mize said. "It's because of the people in this community." Fantastic Needlepoint is open Tuesdays through Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Thursdays close at 7:30 p.m. Find them on Instagram at Fantastic Needlepoint.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.